The Pat Kenny Show
with Mater Private Network
on News Talk.
Well, now we're joined by the Minister for Housing, Local Government and Heritage, Dara O'Brien. Minister, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Pat. Thank you very much.
Now, we'll start with what looks like good news on two fronts. The first is that people who are on social welfare will be able to rent a room in their house tax-free.
Yes, I don't have the details yet because Minister Heather Humphreys will be launching this later on today. But this is an extension of the rent-a-room measure that would apply to social welfare recipients. And I think it's a very good activation measure to try to free up additional accommodation. As I said, Heather will be launching this later on today, but it will have the same parameters as the existing rent-a-room scheme where one can earn up to €14,000 in tax-free if you rent a room in your home. And I think it's right and proper and that be extended to those in receipt of social welfare.
Does that apply? I never thought about this until this announcement, but does it apply already to people who are renting local authority homes?
Yeah, it depends on the yes, it would. And the local authority homes, by the way, depending on your living situation, if someone is on a living alone allowance currently, if they were on welfare payments, it would have actually affected those payments. So that removes that barrier. If someone was working already and had been a number of years in a local authority home and were paying their rent, there would be no barrier at this stage. But this clears a really important hurdle because many of those who are in social homes are obviously either on low income or in receipt of social welfare payments. So the move the government are making today, which, as I said, will be announced later by my colleague Heather Humphreys, will actually remove those barriers. And I think it's a very progressive and correct move.
No, it's just, it seems a bit anomalous that local authorities, you see, they're supposed to approach people who have spare rooms and say, maybe you should be in a smaller house or apartment, and then we can have this larger house or apartment with spare space available for a bigger family.
Oh, I understand the point, and Pat, that does happen in local authorities. They're to manage their local authority stock to ensure that the housing that people are in is appropriate. Now, that can be, you know, not an easy thing either because it's people's homes too, and I've certainly come across situations where there have been family homes that people have lived in for, you know, for decades. But we do manage the stock better. To give you an example, Dublin City Council run a very good scheme and others across the country as well, whereby people can right-size into other social homes to pass on their social home and move into smaller premises, homes themselves. I was in Cork late last week, and in Cork County Council, they were opened a couple of schemes for that very thing, smaller homes, more appropriate for people who may already have a social house and would pass that one on to make sure that the housing is more appropriate for people.
The other good news may or may not be good news, depending on how you view it, that the owners of the Hoth Castle site, which is over 500 acres, have volunteered 6 acres to be devoted to low-cost social housing for people in the area. They're not going to build it, they just give the land. But some people are regarding that as a Trojan horse. Once they get housing in there, a lot of the green space then will be used up for more housing, and the locals cherish that green space.
I know Hoth Castle well, and I'll just be careful, Pat, because this is obviously a matter for Fingal County Council development plan, which they're in the middle of, so I can't comment on specific submissions that are gone in, because that will be a matter for the members of Fingal County Council to deal with. I read the report, all right. I don't have a view on it because legally I can't have a view on it, so I'm afraid to say all. Suffice to say that we're driving
we'll
on with
see how it develops,
affordable homes.
You know, whether it turns out to be a Trojan horse or whether it's a very useful and timely offer. Now, we have to move on to, you know, some of the main preoccupations in your department. And the first is your concerns with On Board Planola.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have set up, Pat, a review into the allegations that have been in the public domain about certain matters within On Board Planola, and I've established a senior counsel review under Remy Farrell. I've published the terms of reference for a concise and focused review that's there that we could expand if needed. Because that's underway, Pat, and this is the second question you've asked that I can't expand upon, unfortunately, because I obviously due process has to be allowed to take place. That work has started.
But I'm wondering what kind of powers Remy Farrell has and under what law. I mean, he doesn't have Garda powers, for instance. So, you know, what powers does he have?
Well, it's basically he'll have access to all the information that he requires, to all files, to look at any allegations, obviously, to interview people. And his job is to carry out that review. It's a senior counsel review, produce a report that will come back to me. I can't, obviously, that's just started. Obviously, you know, I guard the independence and of An Bord Pleanála very, very carefully, and I want to make sure that the organisation itself is absolutely beyond reproach. I've published the terms of reference, Pat, for everyone to see. They are focused, but they're also broad enough should other issues arise that Mr. Farrell could take them into account and could look at them. But I need to let that process happen. It won't go on for indefinitely. I've set a preliminary timeline of 6 weeks. Should the senior counsel require more time, he can certainly ask me for that, and he is aware of that. But this is a focused, time-bound review to look into the matters that are in the public domain, and he will report back to me, and then I will assess it, obviously, with my own team, and then if further action is required, I will take it at that stage.
Okay, so you feel that Remy Farrell can go as narrow or as widely as he sees fit in the course of his investigation?
Yeah, and I can absolutely assure you and your listeners of that, that the terms of reference, whilst focused, do allow him a remit to expand his review should he wish to do so, in the sense that should he feel it is required. So now, that is absolutely in the terms of reference.
You know, a lot of people, you know, are always given out about the board and all of that, but in 2016 there was an organisational review and it was published. There was 101 recommendations. Do you have any idea how many of those recommendations were actually implemented by the board?
Off the top of my head, Pat, I don't. All I would say is that review was 6 years ago. The Office of the Planning Regulator, as well as carrying out work in relation to the procedural review, that was probably one of the most important changes in planning, that the Office of the Planning Regulator was established.
If you go on that website, though, it turns out that most of the things he was asked to do, he says, no, not my remit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, look, I engage quite frequently with Niall Cusson and his team. I've asked Niall to carry out a process review in relation to how we can improve and the board itself can assist the board, because only late last year I approved an additional 40 posts for An Bord Pleanála, 40 additional people to be able to try to speed up and make the process. But look, every organisation needs reviews from time to time as to how we can do things better.
Yeah, but if you get a review and 101 recommendations, how many of them have been implemented? One of the recommendations was about appointing an in-house counsel. Has that happened, do you know? They'd have their own internal legal advice?
No, it hasn't, and it's something that I want to do. I've been minister, as
the,
you know.
The reason, that's great, but that was a 2016 recommendation. Oh, the reason I'm asking is that they keep losing judicial reviews. Now, one of the impacts of that is your planning minister, Peter Burke, railed against judicial reviews, saying there was an industry of planning objections. And I just thought, you know, he wants to get rid of judicial reviews because the board keeps losing them. The correct response to that would be, hang on, why are we losing these judicial reviews? What are we in the board doing that's not appropriate so we keep losing? That would be the right response, would it not?
Yes, and I maybe deal with a couple of points. To be fair to Peter, he wasn't calling for the abolition of judicial reviews, and maybe just to explain what I'm actually doing in that space under the Attorney General, Paul Gallagher. I think I mentioned this the last time I was on your show a few weeks ago. We're doing 5 years' work in 9 months, which is a full review of planning law in Ireland. The purpose of that is to ensure that we've a fair, open and transparent planning system, but that it's also efficient. And we've had many changes to the Planning Act since it was brought in the year 2000. So what I've done is I've established a team in between the Attorney's Office and my own department who are going through every piece of legislation since then, who are looking at potential anomalies or grey areas within planning, and who will be bringing back a report to me in September. Now, it's not just a report, and I know a lot of people here, well, the minister's getting a report, that's great, what's he going to do with it? I will also have options by way of draft legislation, and I intend to publish a consolidated planning a bill later this year, and to move it in the Dáil and Seanad before the end of this year.
Yeah, it does. That is very good news, Minister. Very good news, because at the moment it's so crazy what happens. The local authority create a county development plan. Much work goes into that. And then the board come along and they do something that is contrary to the county development plan. A minister like yourself can come in and decide, oh, I know the county development plan says 10 stories, but I'm going to give 22. So nobody knows where they stand. You know, locals don't know where they stand. Councils don't know where they stand. Developers don't know where they stand, because the rules are there to be broken. I mean, why not have a rules-based system where everybody knows where they stand? If it's a green area, sorry, you can't build there. If it's zoned for building, yes, you can build there. And this is what you can build, and these are the rules. Why is it that we like grey areas in our planning?
Well, I don't like grey areas in our planning, Pat, and that's why we're carrying out this piece of work. And it's extensive. I've 15 senior and junior council working through this. It's never been done before at the rate that we're doing it. The full support of the Taoiseach and Cabinet to do it. But to get to your point, I believe in a plan-led approach to planning. And I think the best place for planning is at a local authority level. That's why I got rid of the SHDs, the fast-track planning, where it would go straight to Mbord Pleanála, where residents felt then that the only say that they had really was either to the board, and if they weren't happy with the decision, was recourse to the courts. So I've re-established the two-stage planning process from the 17th of December last year, is that all new applications for large-scale residential developments must go to the local authorities, and will. And the SHD process is no more. And that, I believe, is a good thing, because it re-democratises that planning process. Because you're 100% right in what you say. Local authorities across the country, in conjunction with elected county councillors, their main reserve function is to do a development plan once every 5 years that sets out very clearly for residents what is permitted in each of the areas within their county. And that should be the approach.
It should be sacrosanct, though, should it not? And I did ask you before, twice, would you not instruct the board not to go against county development plans? But you wouldn't do that. Why not?
Well, Pat, as part of the review, and I think this will be a really interesting thing to do later when we have it published and when I have the new planning legislation, I'm looking at things like extending the term of development plans. I myself believe, and I don't want to preempt what will be in the report, that a five-year development plan with a review halfway through isn't actually long enough to be able to provide for proper planning. So one of the options, and this is one of many, many options that will be put on the table, would be to extend the term of a development plan, because, as you know, it does take time to build, you know, proper communities, proper developments, be they residential, commercial, or town or village centres. And I think we need a longer time to be able to plan forward. So to get back to the point that you've raised about me instructing the board, I will await the work that's been done by the Attorney General and my team. I actually, if I could say this, I believe the measures that we will bring forward in the planning bill in September will deal with a lot of those type of situations that you've raised, a lot of the anomalies. And to be fair, I think, you know, we've learned a lot since the year 2000. I think we need a plan-led approach to planning. All of us understand the situation we're in with regard to housing, that we need to provide good, affordable homes for our people to purchase or rent across the country. That means we need development. But we need good development, and thankfully,
now, Minister, I want to, you know, part of the reason that people get upset are that, you know, there is a document called DMIRS, a design manual for urban roads and streets, which lays down absolutely what should happen, and then people come in and they get planning for something that is contrary to DMIRS, and there are other codes where people get round them. And I'm just wondering, why can't we have a code-led planning system so everybody knows where they stand? And the second point I'd put to you is, you get all these developers who say, oh yeah, I would build that strategic housing development of 200 houses, but I can't get a connection from the grid for electricity, and Irish Water won't give me the water and sewage connection, da-da-da-da. Why are they allowed even to apply for planning if they don't have these connections? I mean, surely that should be first. You know, you cannot go look for planning where there is no water, no sewage, no electricity connection. Get them in first, pay for them first, and then off you go.
Your first point in relation to, you know, planning codes that are out there, of course, they should be adhered to. And to be fair, I think in the main they are. In the vast majority of cases, we have had situations whereby the planning, the National Planning Authority in Bord Pleanála, in the decisions that they make from time to time, would disregard aspects of a code or a development plan. That again is something that is part of the planning review, because I believe when you start planning from the ground up, working with communities, it can also be efficient. It is time well spent. And where there's good planning, and I see good planning all across the country in new developments, the quality of new homes being built. I was in, as I said, West Cork last Friday. You look at Clonakilty, which has won architectural awards for the work that they have done there in the town there, the developments that are happening in Macroom, all these places around where there's good stuff happening. From time to time, that doesn't work, and I agree with you. To deal with the connection piece, I'm acutely aware of that. What we've done with Irish Water, and there's been a big improvement in the last 12 months there. We've published a capacity register, which is on the Irish Water website for anyone to view. So if you decide you want to go in and have a look at Dalkey, for argument's sake, what is the freshwater and wastewater capacity of Dalkey and what's the headroom? You can see that. It's transparent. It's there now.
Yeah, but surely the guy going in to try and build something, unless he knows he will have a connection, he shouldn't even be allowed by the council to apply. He should be told, no, sort out your connections first and then apply and we'll see what we can do for you.
Well, with information that I've just mentioned, like the capacity register, which deals with every town and village right across the country, it's a very extensive piece of work that someone who is going in for planning could actually check, well, is there capacity in Dalkey or in Macroom or wherever they're doing. Now, the local, you can't stop someone making an application, but what it happens in many instances, and in most that I see, is the council would, if they grant a permission, condition the permission on the basis of there being increased capacity, or indeed refuse. But what we've done now is do it the other way around, and is following what you've been advocating for, and I agree with, is more of a plan-led approach. So residents can see, okay, well, what is the capacity in my area? What is the zone land in my area? Where is the connection? And that can be done. The ESB, slightly different matter, and that's outside my remit, but we do work with the ESB in relation to housing delivery. And what I could say, which is good news, in the last 12 months, we've been able to make some significant changes with Irish Water about how they go about their connections and allowing self-connection for developments by once that they're by approved contractors. And that's really sped up the process and has cleared a lot of the waiting lists that we've seen that have held up some good housing developments. And that's working really, really well. So, you know, I think once people know, you know, in a certain area, there is capacity, it is zoned, you know, you apply for your planning, the local authority make that decision. But it goes back to the original point you were making. Planning, in my view, is best made at local authority level, and that's why I've made those changes.
And hopefully, when we have this root and branch change, it'll be very welcome, and we will certainly scrutinise it. A couple of things. Ask the Minister why we've no independent building control inspection service, which there is in all European and developed countries. Without it, it gives free range to developers and builders to do as they please with the quality of construction, mica, fire stopping, and a host of other problems that we've seen in the last 20 years.
Really good point, and I'm glad your texter sent that in, because in each of our local authorities now that does happen. That in our local authorities in relation to building control, that the local authorities are on site, they check buildings, they check them as they're being done. The quality and standards is greatly improved, and we have to learn lessons from, you know, rogue developments in the past, rogue builders, bad workmanship, leaving us with legacy issues like defective block and mica, and like also apartment defects, which I'm working on and might update you on at the appropriate time too.
Okay.
I'm also establishing an independent building control regulator, and that will be established. I hope to publish the legislation later this year that would oversee all of that work. But at a local authority level, that happens now. So you will... I was in... earlier this week in Laois, and I met the two clerks of works who are there, local authority staff do a really good job, and they go out and check the developments as they're being built. Go into the houses, see what's being done there.
That's important.
It is very important.
Say the fire defects that we've seen in so many apartment blocks. Minister, building to rent, so many blocks, people looking to buy apartments, they see them going up all around them. Then it turns out they've all been sold to a fund and not being available to buy. And you know yourself, you're an advocate of it. You know, home ownership gives stability, it creates communities. Transient rentals do not.
Yeah, look, as you say, I am an absolute advocate for home ownership and helping people own their own home. And that's why we've brought forward the affordability measures, which are starting to take hold now, where we're helping
but
people.
But 100 grand to a developer to help him finish an apartment and flog it at a price. All the experience of the body politic over the years is that when you give grants or tax breaks or whatever to individuals, the developers gobble it up and the prices do not fall. They just keep the money.
Firstly, if I could say, your first point was in relation to build-to-rent and the prevalence of build-to-rent right across our five major cities in particular, okay? We need rental properties. We need all tenures. That's fine. I want people to be able to buy apartments and for apartments to be developed in our cities. So what I've brought forward is the Croí Cónaithe Cities Fund. And it isn't a grant to a developer. It is a support to a homeowner to be able to buy that home. So if an apartment, for argument's sake, costs €350,000 to build, and the support towards building that to make it viable is €100,000, it reduces the price to the purchaser by €100,000.
But the builder will just say it costs €100,000 more to build. You know, that's what they do.
No, well, it won't, Pat, in this sense, because we've about 80,000 unactivated planning permissions, about 40,000 of those in Dublin. The majority of them, by the way, were build-to-sell developments, not build-to-rent. The opposition were incorrect on that earlier in the week. The statistics don't lie in that case. So what we've got to make a decision is, do we want apartments and people to be able to buy them in our cities? I do. Do I want to be able to further support home ownership? I do. When we open, we've opened for expressions of interest. It'll be done on an open book basis. So someone would have to submit all the data in relation to a development, and we would decide on a case-by-case basis as to whether the support would be given to the homeowner in that sense. Strict conditions around the fact that it is for homeowners, so purchase only, and also the price cap within a development would be set. And that would be assessed through the housing agency. So, you know, we've discussed this many times in relation to how do we make sure apartments, you know, that we can get people back living in our cities. This is a very focused time-bound measure. And what we're targeting here is about 5,000 new apartments that people can buy in our five major cities between now and 2026. And it will be very strictly controlled. And the support is not to the builder. The support is to the homeowner. And all of the details are published on my department website, the Croí Cónaithe Cities Fund.
I was looking at it last night. Minister, I know you have to...
Just one quick thing, Pat. It will work also in conjunction with the other measures I've brought forward, like the First Home Shared Equity Scheme, which helps people bridge the gap between the finance they have and the finance they need. That scheme opens on the 1st of July this year, and that will be a game changer for many thousands of people who are caught in a rental trap or living at home with their folks. This will help them by the state stepping in and taking an equity stake in their home. And, things are moving along. We're seeing good completion figures this year, really good commencement figures this year, the best since 2011. We're seeing the highest drawdown of first-time buyer mortgages since 2007. So the plan is taking effect. It's moving forward, and the momentum is there. And
okay.
I'm determined.
The last question. Sure. I have so many things to talk to you about: co-living and flats for students, and how expensive. Anyway, you know, the ones that have been built, 1,300 for a room with a fold-down bed. I mean, really, that's crazy stuff. But anyway, the last thing is about Ukraine, and the plans to house Ukrainians. And, you know, people may be rightly asking, you know, if you're going to convert barracks and you're going to do prefabs and all the rest of it for Ukrainian refugees, and rightly so, why couldn't you do it for us who can't find something to rent or buy?
Well, let's remember why we're doing this. It's an emergency response to a war in Europe where we've had the single biggest number of people and movement of people since World War II. We've over 30,000 Ukrainians here, and we've accommodated all of them. Those who need accommodation, we've been able to do that. The repurposing of older buildings is not for permanent accommodation. It's not, you know, it'll be for more temporary and semi-permanent, in the sense that looking at, you know, older buildings that we can repurpose. So it is, you know, this is for many Ukrainians when the time is right for them, and hopefully when the situation improves and the war ends, they do want to go home. So these are measures in the meantime that we can have, you know, more semi-permanent accommodation as opposed to hotels and that. We have been repurposing buildings for permanent accommodation already for our own people, people who are resident here on social housing stock. I was in Waterford recently with Minister Mary Butler and St. Joseph's in the centre of Waterford City. 72 apartments are being put into what was an old convent building, an old convent school, being fully repurposed with magnificent apartments within it. We're doing the same in Limerick, doing the same in Dublin. So we are doing that, but this is in addition to what we're doing as a humanitarian response to people who are seeking refuge and safe harbour here in Ireland. And I know, to be fair, the vast, vast bulk of Irish people absolutely support the measures that we're taking to look after our friends in Ukraine who are fleeing a brutal war that's been brought upon them by Russia. And we're going to do everything we can to help in that space.
All right. Minister Dara O'Brien, thank you very much for joining us on the programme.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Matter Private Network.
Weekdays at 9 a.m.